This is Chef John Foles welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and of course, we're going to cook for you. Jack Sprat could eat no fat, and that's too bad because he missed out on some juicy and flavorful dishes. Sounds like Mrs. Sprat had all the fun. Join me, Chef John Foles, and author Jennifer McLagan as we talk about cooking with fat on Stirring It Up. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. A team of investigators from the U.S. Chemical Safety Board is heading to West Virginia to look into the chemical spill that has forced more than 300,000 people in the Charleston area to do without tap water for a third straight day. The board is calling the spill massive. Authorities still do not know when the water will be safe to drink. General James Hoyer with the West Virginia National Guard says officials are exploring their next steps.
What possibilities exist to bring certain parts of the system back on at certain periods of time, as well as a phased approach potentially to be able to use water for different activities.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency has delivered more than four dozen truckloads of water supplies to the area so far. The Obama administration is dumping the lead contractor responsible for building the trouble-plagued federal online healthcare exchange. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports the technology consulting firm Accenture has been chosen to take over operation of the website.
Accenture replaces lead website contractor CGI Federal. On Friday, CGI and the Obama administration announced they had mutually agreed to part ways on healthcare.gov after the website's disastrous launch in October. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services announced the selection of Accenture as the lead contractor for the healthcare portal in a short statement. It said the agency looks forward to working with all its contract partners to ensure a smooth transition and to prepare for next year's open enrollment period. After a White House-led redesign, more than a million people have signed up for health coverage through the federal exchange. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Vice President Joe Biden will lead a U.S. delegation to the memorial service for former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, who died today at the age of 85. Daniel Estrin in Jerusalem reports Sharon was one of Israel's most controversial and influential leaders.
Ariel Sharon's son announced his death at the hospital. Gilad Sharon said, "That's it. He has gone. He went when he decided to go." Sharon had been in a coma since suffering a stroke 8 years ago while he was serving as prime minister. Sharon's doctor said his kidneys and other organs stopped functioning. He died of heart failure. Israeli President Shimon Peres praised Sharon as a brave soldier and a daring leader, one of Israel's great protectors and most important architects. Sharon was considered a tough military general and a hardliner in his policies toward the Palestinians. He was also a champion of Jewish settlements in captured territories, but in 2005, he led a dramatic and surprising withdrawal of settlers from the Gaza Strip. For NPR News, I'm Daniel Estrin in Jerusalem.
An FBI official says the gunman who carried out a deadly attack at a shopping mall in Kenya last fall most likely died during the siege. At least 67 people were killed. This is NPR News. President Obama is pledging to make 2014 a year of action. He says job creation is at the top of his to-do list, but he has other priorities as well.
We've got to keep creating jobs that offer new opportunity and make sure those jobs offer the wages and benefits that let you rebuild some security. We've got more kids to educate and families to get covered with health insurance and an immigration system to fix.
The president, in his weekly address, he urged Congress to extend jobless benefits for the long-term unemployed. Votes on legislation to do that are expected in the Senate early next week. A raging fire has destroyed an ancient town that was a popular tourist attraction in southwest China. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports so far there have been no reports of casualties.
The fire broke out in the early hours of Saturday in the 1,300-year-old town of Dukezong in Yunnan Province. Pictures show the fire engulfing a hillside area and turning the night sky red. It took more than 2,000 firefighters, police, officials, and volunteers around 10 hours to put out the blaze. Narrow, cobbled streets made access for the firefighters difficult, and the old wooden houses caught fire quickly in the dry weather. The town is on an ancient trade route where Chinese tea was traded for Tibetan horses. In 2001, local officials changed the name of the county where the town is located to Shangri-La after the fictional Himalayan utopia in order to draw more tourists. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Beijing.
Another retailer has been hit by hackers who've stolen credit and debit card information from customers. Luxury retailer Neiman Marcus says the thieves used the data to make unauthorized charges over the holiday season. The incident comes after Target acknowledged security breaches that have affected tens of millions of its customers. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, working to ensure all Americans have access to health care at rwjf.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, and welcome to the kitchen table. It's so nice to have all of you with us. I'm so glad you could make it in this morning.
Just saying.
We hadn't seen you since New Year's Eve. We hadn't seen you. Where have you been?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Where have you been?
I've been ringing in the new year. I can tell you where I would like to have been, but, you know.
Well, Slama and I were busy.
I took a little trip to France to ring in the new year.
Mentally,
I did. Yeah. Me and Mariette, we were there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I bet Paris.
We were in the vineyard.
I bet Paris has never seen that before, huh? Anyway, and then across the glass wall, of course, keeping us alive and well, the music dynamic and well balanced, and of course, keeping us on the air, Dean Slama, our engineer. How was your New Year's Eve, huh?
Oh, Chef, I was doing good. And now I'm doing great.
You're doing good.
I got some New Year's coffee right here, and things are looking good.
Man, all I could think about was that pork roast.
Ooh, oof.
All I could think about was my pork roast.
All I could think about was cassoulet.
Cassoulet? Dead pork in it. I'm sure they did. Well, anyway, so New Year's was good, huh? Did you have a Réveillon celebration or what, huh?
I did a little celebrating. You can call it Réveillon if you like.
Yeah.
Had a little bubbly. Ate my weight in pate.
Oh, did you?
Yes, indeed. You know I love pate. Never met one I didn't like.
Yeah.
How was yours? I know you did a little Réveillon.
Well, no, it was good. I have to say I had a pretty good evening as well. Great, great, great food. My good buddy Andrew Capone was there with me. Charlie Landry stopped by to have a little drink.
So the gang was all there except me.
The gang was all there. We couldn't find you. Hey, we couldn't find you.
Did you look?
We looked good and hard. Had my black-eyed peas and cabbage on New Year's Day. My good pork roast was sitting there. And, of course, my brother showed up with that pie.
The sweet potato?
That pie.
The soup?
That I begged him never to ever bring to my house. That runny, soupy pie that he thinks is like good. You know?
So that's how you started the New Year?
I did. I said, you
with
know.
With runny pie. That doesn't bode well.
Well, he said, well, you said you wanted to start off the New Year running. So you brought the pie.
So speaking of running,
yeah,
now's the time that everyone's making their New Year's resolutions about getting more exercise, dieting, you know, starting off the new year right. So good time to talk about fat.
Fat. Dean, what you're looking at? What you looking at when you say fat? Just because y'all forget that I was invited to play the Kiwanis Christmas play this year, and I was Santa Claus. Now I'm just trying to take the weight off. No. Kiwanis called me in. Y'all be looking at me.
See, there you go, thinking about fat in a bad way. But I wasn't referring to the fat everyone wants to get rid of around the waist and hips. I'm talking about the fat. lard we used to cook with before there was all this vegetable oil and margarine
like Mary Fisher used to say, margarine butter.
Margarine, that's right.
Margarine butter we were going to use today. Well, I'm glad you clarified that, so to speak. I can exhale now. I can relax a little bit that we weren't just talking about fat. You're talking about good fat.
Yeah, no, you don't have to go on a diet.
Well, you're talking my language. As you know, I've never shied away from using what I consider to be the absolute best way to flavor any food, to keep my recipes moist and juicy. I mean, for goodness sakes, that was a part of every boucherie. You remove that layer of fat and skin, you cut it into little squares, you put it into one of those big number 50 cast iron pots and a little bit cold water in the bottom. You'd bring it to a little boil, you'd render that fat, you'd be creating lard. And not only would we cook the cracklings to golden brown in that, but what remained was the lard, that wonderful lard, transferred to those 5-gallon tin cans that was used for not only preserving our sausages and our boudins, made the best cat head biscuits a man could ever pray for, and of course, it was our oil.
Well, now, in my day, it wasn't the 5-gallon, bucket of lard, but it was the little can or jar of bacon drippings and things like that on the counter or the windowsill. Or my grandmother, Granny York, kept it right there in the middle of the stove, and it was a little silver canister labeled grease.
She must have been cooking for one if she had a can. If she all had a little can, huh?
Well, this is Oklahoma. It's a little different. But now all you find are plastic bottles or cans of spray or vegetable oil. Now, don't get me wrong either about olive oil. I love olive oil. I like to cook with olive oil. But I think you'd agree that it's not suitable for cooking certain really rich, delectable dishes that call for tender, juicy cuts of meat. And it's really a shame that, we've been conditioned to think that animal fat is bad for you. Doctors say it, food manufacturers, and those bone-thin models on TV. I mean, it's a conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy. I mean, when you think about it, for thousands of years, we ate saturated fat. We ate animal fat. It was the only fat other than crushing the olives, right? For the oil. Well, there were the seed oils as well. But once a scientist found that link between saturated fat and heart disease, I think industry, media, government latched on to that like a dog to a shank bone. I know what I'm talking about. Years later, here we are eating trans fats, refined carbohydrates, and all this blah-tasting food. We've lost touch with the importance that fat, real fat, really plays in not only our health, but certainly in the taste of our food. When it's used as all things in life should be considered, and that is moderation.
And you mentioned fat from pork.
I sure did.
But there are other fats too, like fat from poultry. If you think about it, I can remember the first time I ate duck and it had that little thin layer of fat, and I thought, I am not eating that. And then something happened, I accidentally did, and it was delicious. That's what made all the difference. And it's kind of like those little fat clumps that you find under the skin of chickens. It's kind of like the marbling in beef and pork. It's what we're conditioned to trim away. But when you remove all of it from cooking, you also remove all the flavor and all the juiciness from the bird.
Fat is full flavor. I mean, that's why crackling was so great. That's why we made crackling biscuits, and that's why we put crackling in the cornbread. But the chief monounsaturated fatty acid in poultry fat is that oleic acid, which is well known for its beneficial effects on cholesterol as well. And fat is also a preservative, as I mentioned a minute ago. Think of foie gras. Oh. Think of confit. Think of rillettes,
Some of my favorite things.
Yeah, confit means to preserve anyway. Confit is used to wrap and store not only foie gras, but confit is just kind of cooking, let's say duck legs with the skins down, just cooking and cooking until it falls apart, and then the fat becomes the preservative around the meat. We use it in our restaurants every day. We have good confit on our salumi boards. And talking about fat, nothing is more popular today than the understanding that fat on meats are really the cool thing. Now, again, moderation, but still in all, Everybody who walks into our restaurant wants a salumi board. So that's all of your meats, your hams, your prosciuttos, all of your, you know, the whole story.
Well, do you think that there's kind of when you go out to a restaurant, you allow yourself to have that fat? Because at home, it seems like there's an obsession with lean meat as well. When it comes to beef, the marbling, that's what determines whether a cut of beef is juicy or whether it's dry. And it took me a long time to actually understand that. Did you know in 1927, the original grading scale that was set up for marbling listed 12 levels of marbling, but today there are only 6.
So yeah, fat is good, and no one even thought about fat, period, as anything bad until, of course, we start to find ourselves. And I'm going to choose a day, and I'm going to say in the 1940s, 1950s, the war years are over. People are coming back from the war. The lifestyle becomes a little better. There's great work. Everybody has a home. Everybody's buying a car. You go on to work in factories. You go on to work in department stores. Office buildings are opening. Technology is coming about. And all of a sudden, people go to work and sit down. All of a sudden, a television is invented. Oh, my God, we have to sit in front of the TV. Whereas my grandfather, Papa Zerang and Papa Falls, they worked in the swamp. They were moss pickers. They were trappers. They were farmers. There's no way they would have anything but lean on their body. But they ate all of the bacon. They ate all of the fat. They ate all of the boudins. They ate all of the andouilles. They ate all of the pansies. The pork chops had to be full and fatty, but they were lean as a rail, and they didn't, none of them died of heart disease, you know. So
isn't that incredible?
Yeah. So and I think that's the only difference. And now we've equated the problem to the fat,
right? When
it's
really
not about the fat. It's not about the fat at all. It's about lifestyle instead of the fat. The fat has always been there. And yes, today our meat is a little more marble. I mean, look at Wagyu.
Yeah.
The Wagyu beef, the famous Wagyu beef. People are paying, you know, as much as $100 to $125 for a ribeye steak just to get the fat.
Whoa.
From, oh, yeah, just to get the fat from the Wagyu. Just to get the Wagyu is the Japanese cow that you used to hear stories about. They were fed only beer and massaged every day. I mean, you've heard those stories. Well, that's what the Wagyu is. It's an animal that's bred for a lot of fat in the meat. Of course, that makes it unbelievably juicy, and fat is full flavored. And now when you're judging meat, they're grilling the meat and tasting it for the flavor of the fat, not the chewiness of the meat, or not the flavor of the fat is what they're judging on. How good does the fat taste?
In just the Wagyu or in
all
meat?
No, meat and meat in general, and meat in general. And they're grading meat now. They used to grade it prime, and which they still do, and choice and good.
Is that based on the fat content?
That's based on fat content, sure. Now, Wagyu is graded as supreme.
As a new category.
Yeah, yeah. And they are, and they're selecting supreme, and that's X number of dollars a pound. And I took some pictures. Fact is, we loaded them up on our website of the first Wagyu loin that we sliced bone in from some cattle that's grown in Louisiana, grass-fed, but then going to the feedlots to eat. And putting on that last 400 pounds on corn in the feedlots and then slaughtered. We just got a sample of it just to see what it would look like in the restaurant. And I loaded up the pictures on our website so that people could see exactly what a marble meat of Wagyu looks like. And that was 1,000 pounds grass-fed in Louisiana and at the same time grain-fed for the last 400 pounds. Anyway, y'all, we're talking about fat. We're talking about good fat. We're talking about something that tastes very good. And don't think it's bad. We're going to explain that more. We'll be back in a minute.
Jazz knows everything. To his ma, he said, well, mama, don't you give all the lard away. Say some more for a rainy day. He's good looking, it's true enough. Take your time, strut your stuff.
Glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays here on KRVS.
Hi, this is Nick Forster. Every week in E-Town, we bring together musicians from a wide range of styles for some great live performances and conversation. And we also present the Achievement Award to someone doing outstanding work in their communities. It's an hour of uplifting stories and music each week on E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
This week, we'll source our music in Ireland, Scotland, Brittany and North America as we track down some roots-inspired acoustic guitar music from great players like Tony McManus on the Thistle and Shamrock.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Visit the KRVS website for programming information, live streaming audio, podcasts of locally produced programming, and world news from NPR Digital. It's all at krvs.org. This is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Some of you cats just ain't on the beam. Oh, I know what's wrong. You've been cooking with cream. Now, if you want a beat that is rugged and hard, fry me cookie with a can of lard.
Everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and culture show on radio. We're so happy that you took the time to join us at the kitchen table today, and we're talking about the benefits of fat, one of my favorite things. And Michelle, we have a great guest, a guest I've admired, as you know, from afar, and I came back with her book from a butcher shop, and I'm thumbing through it. And of course, we have all of her books here, yes, in the library, and we were lucky enough to capture her today. Huh?
I know it.
Introduce her for us.
Jennifer McLaughlin is our guest today, author of the very inspirational, if not a little unexpected, book entitled Fat: An Appreciation of a Misunderstood Ingredient. Love the title. Jennifer actually left behind her degree in economics and politics for the food industry. And now, for over 35 years' experience, she's been a chef, a caterer, a food stylist, and writer. She spent time in the kitchens of Melbourne, Australia, also London, England. She was chef at Winfield House for the U.S. ambassador to the Court of St. James in England.
Wow.
She's a regular contributor to the magazines Fine Cooking, Food and Drink, and other culinary publications. She's a presenter at many prestigious food festivals, such as the Food and Wine Classic in Aspen, and of course the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival Masterclass Series. Her first book, which I have right here, Bones, won numerous awards, among them the James Beard Best Single Subject Cookbook Award. And her book, Fat, was named Cookbook of the Year in 2009 by the Beard Foundation. She's been referred to as courageous, contrarian, and even a little crazy. So I guess she's in good company with us here today.
I love that.
We are kindred spirits. Jennifer, welcome, welcome to Stirring It Up.
Thank you very much. That's a nice introduction.
Courageous and contrarian, apparently, with the success of your books, that's not a bad thing. Now, how did you earn those titles? You should be proud of those titles. How did you get them?
I am really proud of them, you know, because I guess I just pick unpopular topics or topics that go against the grain. So everyone thinks I'm a little crazy. But the things that I love, and it's the way I cook with bones and with fat. You know, I think they're kind of essential parts of flavor and taste when you cook, and I'm sure you feel the same way, John.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it, especially coming from Louisiana, coming from the swamplands here, where flavor and ingredients and, as we say, a lot of the lesser popular cuts of meat as well as species is always on our table. So I understand it very, very well, and that's why I have such an unbelievable appreciation for your work.
Jennifer, you said, you know, you love cooking with bones and with fat, and, you know, did you grow up that way? Where did your love
Yeah, that's how I grew up, so it didn't seem odd or contrarian to me at all. You know, when I was a kid, my mother would make ham soup, you know, with the ham bone and the split peas, which I'm sure everyone makes, and we always had fat in our fridge. You know, there was always a container of lard and beef drippings, and there was always butter in our fridge. You know, that was how we cooked. We didn't have vegetable oils of any sort. We had a little bit of olive oil, but none of these newfangled vegetable oils. We just cooked in fat. And, you know, the flavor is in those fats. There's so much taste and flavor in them.
Well, you know, Jennifer, also, I mean, when we talk about kindred spirits, I grew up in basically a trapper's cabin in the swamps of Louisiana. My father was a trapper. He was a French-speaking trapper, and his family generationally were the same, so they took care of themselves. We raised our animals. We raised our pigs, and, of course, every year the community of butchers would come together. There was 8 or 10 families that all grew their animals, and, of course, they would come together at one time to help each other do the butchering and the cooking and the preserving and share the goods of that particular boucherie, as we call it. And then a couple of weeks later, we met at someone else's home. And all of us had a job. The 3, 4, 5-year-olds would haul wood, or the 8-year-olds would bring water. The big pots would be set up by the 12-year-old. So all of our lives, we've been around it. We've seen it. We've cut the fat off of the hog for the cracklings. We rendered the fat, realizing that it was a preservative for us as well as a cooking ingredient, the sausages. I remember my grandmother saying, go out on the porch and get a ham of sausages. And we dipped down into those big crocks to pull the sausages out. And I think people who didn't grow up like that, or people who that seemed so foreign to them, that people actually cooked and preserved and had just this luscious love of fat, because not only was it a great ingredient, but it was so essential for our actual well-being in the swamps of Louisiana. Do you find that to be true in places of the world, and we've just gotten too far away from it?
Yeah, I think we've got a long way away from our food, and that makes people fear certain things. You know, you're right, fat is an essential part of our diet. You know, it's really necessary. Not only it's good for preserving, it's good for flavor. It's pretty hard to cook without some kind of fat. If you want to fry anything or bake anything, you need fat. But it's also good for us, right? I mean, you know, people always cut off the fat and ate that first. You know, people in cold climates used fat. There's lots of minerals and vitamins that are fat soluble. So you need that fat not only for the taste and preserving, but to be healthy as well. But now the world is totally reversed, and a lot of people think that fat is extremely unhealthy and bad for us.
When do you think we started to move away from that, and why? We were talking about that a little earlier and speculating on reasons, but what have you found?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I grew up with it. It seems that it kind of happened in around the 1950s or so. There was this famous thing called the lipid thesis, and it was a theory that, you know, eating fat was associated with heart disease, and it was only an association, and it was never actually proved. And the person who came up with the theory took six countries. He chose six countries out of 22 to prove his theory. But if he'd taken any other six, he would have proved the opposite, because people know that, you know, the French eat a lot of fat, the Maasai eat a lot of fat, the Inuit in the northern climates, they eat a lot of fat, and they don't have a problem with cardiovascular disease. So that's what started it off. And then people became, you know, scared of fat. They said, oh, that was going to make us sick. And it just spiraled. And then we could get vegetable oils, we could get vegetable fats, and they were cheaper than animal fats. And they lasted longer, and they didn't need to be refrigerated. And all of a sudden, we switched from thousands of years of eating wonderful fat to, like, being scared of it. It was quite amazing, right? You know, at the beginning of the 20th century, the top fats in our kitchen were lard, beef fat, chicken fat, and butter. And at the end of the century, it was soybean oil and canola oil and cottonseed oil. So in 100 years, we went from animal fats to vegetable oil.
What a great journey you just took us through right there. I was living it as you said it, because Michelle and I were talking earlier today, and I said, I was born in 1946. And I said, when my father and his friends came back from the war, and we were coming from a lifestyle prior to the war where we lived the way you just talked about. I remember the butchers coming around on these old steak body trucks as a very young child, and they would come and they would have all these beautiful loins of pork or whatever, and they were selling it because it was so beautifully filled with fat. And then the war years are over, and people are coming back from the wars, and instead of going back into the trapping and the farming industry, coming into offices, and they're now going into factories, and they quit farming. And our great boucheries, every 2 or 3 weeks at the family farm by 1955 or so, all of that was disappearing, and maybe it was one hog a year. And I think from that point on, just as you've said, I remember my grandfather, one of the greatest things I remember about him, visiting him in the hospital. He's about 90 years old, and he's basically on his deathbed. And I'll never forget when he said, make sure y'all dig up the food out of the garden and get it in the barn, because he said, you know, good food is disappearing nowadays. Now, this is about 1958 or 59. Good food is disappearing nowadays. And that's exactly what you're talking about. People started to get afraid of good food and started to fall to the myths that were being handed to them, right?
Yeah, they thought that something was made in a factory was better than something that was made on the farm. It's kind of so crazy how people fell for that, right? And, you know, someone tells me, oh, they eat margarine rather than butter because it's easier to spread. what a silly reason. I mean, it doesn't have any taste or flavor. You know, butter has so much taste or flavor. Take a piece out of the fridge a little bit before you want to spread it.
Wow, is that crazy.
Jennifer, I want to ask you, the fat terms can be very confusing, and I try to read the labels, and saturated, unsaturated, poly, mono, it's all a mystery. Can you clean up that for me so that I can read the label?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, maybe you shouldn't be reading the labels too much. Buy food that doesn't have labels on it.
There you go. Thank you, Jennifer.
That is a great rule of thumb.
But, you know, fat is fat. You know, people say, oh, saturated fat is bad. You know, polyunsaturated fat. But every fat is a mixture of saturated and unsaturated fat. There's two kinds of fat, you know, saturated and unsaturated. And I'm not a scientist, but it's got something to do with hydrogen atoms or something like that, but it doesn't really matter. And in the unsaturated fat, there's two sorts, polyunsaturated and monounsaturated. Most animal fats are mixtures, of course, of all of those fats, but things like duck fat is actually more unsaturated than saturated. So the way to tell is if you have a fat at room temperature in your kitchen, the more liquid it is, the more unsaturated it is. And probably if it's very liquid, like a vegetable oil, it'll be polyunsaturated. And if it's kind of still firm at room temperature, it's probably like beef fat, which is more saturated, and duck fat and goose fat. It's kind of soft, almost liquidy at room temperature. So that's one way to tell. And don't be afraid. You know, saturated fat, good quality saturated fat is good for you. There's lots of good things in animal fat that helps protect your system against disease, boost your immune system. So don't be afraid of that. You want to have, you know, good quality fat in your kitchen and in your body.
And I admit, sometimes I crave fat. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know exactly what brings that on, but I actually crave it. And I think if my body is craving that, then it obviously needs it. It's something that your body needs.
Yeah, that's true. Your body does need it because it helps you take in calcium and fat-soluble vitamins, you know, like vitamin A and D that they put in milk, and then they make low-fat or skinny milk with it in. Well, it's kind of useless because if there's no fat in the milk, you're not going to take in the vitamins because they're fat-soluble vitamins, right?
Right.
And I think your body does tell you, you should listen to your body a little bit more. It says, oh, you need some fat. Oh, sometimes I feel like I need a good piece of liver. I think, you know, sometimes we don't listen to what our body is telling us that it needs to eat.
I mean, that is so true what you just said. I crave certain foods at certain times, and I always think to myself, I must need it, and liver's a good example. I love liver. You know, Jennifer, in Louisiana, you being a chef as well, we have a saying here in the swamplands of Louisiana, in Cajun country, we say, we begin with the root. Everything here begins with the roux, a good gumbo, a good fricassee, a good sauce, all of those things. And I'm a huge fan of designing my roux around the fat that I'm cooking with. If I'm doing a pork fricassee, cooking it down in that brown gravy, I want to make my roux with pork fat. If I'm doing something with beef, if I'm doing griots and grits, then I want to take the fat of my round steaks or the round and render it down and make my roux with the beef. And not same thing with the duck. You mentioned duck just now. My God, I love duck fat. When I do my duck gumbos, duck and andouille gumbo, which is smoked pork sausage and duck, I use duck fat. I render it down, and the same thing with chicken.
Boy, you're a man after my own heart, John. That's exactly how I cook. You know, people say, well, how can I use all these fats? And I'm thinking, well, doesn't it make sense to cook chicken in chicken fat? It makes sense to cook beef in beef fat. It just makes sense to me, and it's a way of layering the flavors in a dish, right? The same with those roux. Like, why would you cook duck in beef fat? You know, it doesn't seem right to me, you know, and so that's exactly how I cook. Whatever meat I'm cooking, I cook it in the fat that is related to the meat.
Well, I know you're going to be happy to know that I have a food division of my company as well, a chef-driven manufacturing company where we saute and we reduce and we roast and we do the things that a lot of companies are doing, mainly with flavorings and modified food starches and things like that. But you'll be happy to know that we started to create a line of roux that we produce and kettles that we created. We cook 1,000 pounds, a half ton at a time, of these roux that are all made with these different fats. I actually buy the beef fat, I buy the duck fat in 50-gallon drums, and then turn it into roux that we sell to companies. Now that chefs are starting to hear you and I talk or read your book, and now they're saying, oh my God, I didn't even think about doing a roux with duck fat. I didn't think of doing it. So I want you to know that I love it so much. We're actually turning it into a business of roux created by unique fats.
Oh, that's excellent. I love to hear that.
Jennifer, we've pretty much said how much we love your book, Fat and Bones and Odd Bits. But what are you working on? What can we look forward to seeing from you in the future?
I'm doing something else. I like to take up unloved causes, I think. And my next book, which will be out in September, it's on the taste of bitter. Uh-huh. And, of course, it covers not so much meat in this book, but it's a lot of chicories and bitter greens and, of course, you know, a lot of bitter alcohols and beer and everything like from cardoons to chocolate and coffee, radicchios, all those kind of tastes that people don't seem to like so much in North America, but in Europe and other parts of the world, in Asia, they love that bitter taste. And I think bitter is an important element. Like fat, it's important to have that to balance a dish or to balance a meal.
I'm in total agreement. What advice would you give to our listeners who's been so skeptical, and they're probably listening to the show and saying, oh my God, I believe a duck fat. What advice would you just give those who want to say, you know what, I've been on these really strict no fat diets. How do I start including a little bit fat in my diet and feel really good about it? What's the words you would tell them?
Well, I would say that eating fat doesn't make you fat. Eating fat makes you slim, because fat makes you feel very satisfied. So put a little bit fat back into your dish and you'll find that you'll eat less and better than something that's low fat or no fat that doesn't have any taste. So put a little bit of fat back in. And when you roast a bird or roast a joint of meat, keep the fat and use that to cook your steak or cook your chicken leg or whatever else. Just introduce it a little by little. And, of course, everything with moderation, but you'll discover how much taste there is and you'll be so much more satisfied with a smaller amount of food. You'll probably find you'll be losing weight rather than putting it on.
That's right, because the flavor will be so rich. That's great advice. Well, Jennifer, you've been just not only a great, great guest. We knew you would be, but we love your work. And I do hope that we get to meet.
She needs to come for a boucherie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Come and be our guest. We do our national PBS show every year, and I know we're going to be doing some things coming up. I would love, absolutely love, for you to be our guest, and we're going to give you plenty of notice to come in and be a part of one of the boucheries we do with some of our folks who are really loving the new art of butchering, and I should say the new art in their home of butchering. We'd love to have you as a guest.
Oh, thank you. I'd love to be there. And if you can promise me some pig's blood, I'll make you my blood ice cream.
Oh my gosh.
You've got it. And believe me, if there's one man in Louisiana who can get you pig's blood, you talking to him.
Oh, great.
Thank you, Jennifer. You've been great. And look, just keep on keeping on. You're a wonderful, wonderful spirit. We appreciate
it. Great to talk to you, John and Michelle.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. We're going to take us a quick little break here right now. What a great interview she was. I just love her already. So anyway, y'all, we'll be back in just a minute. We're talking pig's blood, as you know. Right, so he made butter out of cream. He kicked his legs up, he tossed and turned, so not to end up a ghost. He did the hokey pokey till the cream was churned. Maybe he walked right out and buttered his toast. Now he's on.
I want to see you at high noon. Noontime, Thursdays on KRVS 88.7. For rock, roll, rhythm, it's Old Gold on KRVS, an hour on Thursdays at noontime. Hi, this is Lee Kleinpeter with an invite to join me Thursdays at noon on KRVS 88.7 for Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Elvis, Carl Perkins, even Dolly Parton.
Bedouins, Nubians, Sufis, and Saidis. In the throes of revolution, Egypt is rediscovering its roots. Hello, Georges Collinet here. Join me for the music of Zefa, Moulid, and Zar, Egypt's living traditions. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Kleinpeter or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, public radio for Acadiana.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, online at krvs.org.
No substitute on my shelf. Cause you can whip it, spread it, fight it, let it, wrap your loving arms around it. Eat it, need it, love it, leave it, melt it with your heart and serve it up.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show, the best culture show on radio. And we're talking today about using fats in cooking. And believe me, we will have all of Jennifer's information on our website, www.jfalls.com. But right now, we got to talk a little bit about our Facebook page.
Yeah. Come on, check out our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/stirringitupradio. And that's our public forum. That's where all the stovehounds are getting together. And we encourage our fans and listeners and otherwise to come on by and post pictures or experiences. You know, Chef, what we're always looking for is what our listeners want to hear.
Yeah, like, or what they're cooking.
Yeah, especially what they're cooking. Like today we're talking about fats and we're talking about bones. We'd like to know how people use fat in their cooking as well, or some of the interesting things they're doing. I mean, we have the roasted marrow bones that we love so much. We always put soup bones in our soup. What are people doing? By the way, did Mariette load up all of my my incubation of the white Israel Thibodeau melitons?
Huh? She sure did. We've got a bunch of really great Snow White melitons out there on our Facebook page.
I think we have 20 planted so far. Michelle, I'm happy to report that about 15 of them already got little leaves popping up, which I'm very happy about.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of chilly.
I know, but they're in my greenhouse.
Oh, okay.
They're in my greenhouse. They're doing good. Talking about fat, I did load up some beautiful pictures of the first loin sliced bone in of our Wagyu beef Charlie Landry and I are raising a couple of Wagyu calves that we're doing, but also Dr. David Raines, who's up in West Monroe, Louisiana, is raising the largest Wagyu herd. And pretty soon, the Wagyu beef, which is one of the most marble best in a Louisiana breed, if you can imagine that, will now take its place as one of the top meats on the grocery store shelves. Goodness. In specialty markets. So since we have two of the Wagyu calves out of his herd, we're going to start doing a little bit with ours as well. So you want to look on our website to see that as well. Look, Charlie just walked in, huh? So, yeah, so Charlie and I are going to raise one or two, see if we can cut them up and get us some good meat out of it. And then if it's who knows if they're any good on our own grass, we might actually add a couple more to the herd.
Come on. Look out, y'all.
Anyway, what else we got going on?
So, yeah, also on jfulce.com, if you click around on our website for the radio show, we've got an archive page up where we archive all the past shows by subject matter.
Anyway, y'all, so visit our website page. You're going to see everything. By the way, the chairman of our Stovehound Club, you know, David.
Oh, Hubble?
Yeah, David Hubble. His cousin was supposed to load up a picture of all the girls from Mobile Bay and the restaurant in our kitchen.
Oh,
I wonder if he got it up yet. Send Dr. Hubble a note about getting that picture from his cousin. I think our viewers would love to see that in the big kitchen at Revolution. Michelle, what else? What about books on the subject today?
Well, of course, the first book I want to recommend is Fat, An Appreciation of a Misunderstood Ingredient. That was by our guest, Jennifer McLaughlin. And everything we talked about with Jennifer and so much more is in here. You'll learn all about the good fats and how to prepare delicious meals with them. Pork, beef, poultry fats, the history of their use through the ages, why we got away from them, and why we're seeing them finally return to our tables. Jennifer gives a lot of great information, plus delicious recipes for terrines, foie gras, pork crackling, all of our favorites, and how to prepare basic fats for use in cooking. So get the skinny on fat from Jennifer.
I like that.
The next book I think you'll like is called How to Cook Pork Belly Like a Pro. And I know pork belly is very near and dear to your heart.
Well, it's made a big comeback over the last few years, and we have it in many different ways on the menu.
That's right. This book was written by Judith Stone, and an inexpensive cut of meat. It was once considered overly fatty, but it, as you said, it's resurfacing on restaurant menus, Restaurant Revolution among them. This publication contains easy to follow recipes for those who are unfamiliar with how to prepare this cut properly. This is a Kindle book, so you can take it into the kitchen with you as you try all the great recipes. In no time, you'll be making tender, succulent dishes with this underrated and delicious cut of meat. And I want to mention that this past holiday season, we debuted Encyclopedia as an ebook electronic reader. So just wanting to remind everybody that that is available. So
that came out on all the Apple devices and
Kindles
and Nook and all that. So I hope those who didn't want to carry our 11-pound book around.
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't.
The greatest response I had was the fact that the index was all on it, and you could click on the index to the recipe. Was really incredible.
Yep, right
there. They love that, and all the pictures are there. So it's the exact same thing as the books.
So anyway, we'll have these books on the website, great additions to your culture and culinary library, and we'll have that info on jfulce.com.
Well, absolutely. Now, of course, I have a couple of good things. The braised shanks. I love braised shanks because they have this beautiful, beautiful marrow bone right down the center of the shanks, and I think there's absolutely nothing better. However, I do also have that I'm loading up on the website for you today. You can get all of our recipes for the 7-bean soup. I have a good 7-bean soup that you can pull off of that. I have plantains, which is the ground meat wrapped in caul fat. We were talking about caul fat a while ago, and these are like little
pork. Where do you get caul fat?
Any butcher shop. Caul fat is like, they call it veil fat. It looks just like a veil. Just like a veil. It's exactly what it looks like, and it's the fat that's found on the inside of the cavity of an animal surrounding the organ. So when they butcher, they just pull this veil fat out and they wrap it up. And you can wrap it. It cooks. It disappears. It just holds the meat in place. But heat will actually melt the caul fat away. So you have this disappearing veil that you wrap around the food. And then when it goes into the oven, it melts away. But it holds everything in perfect shape until it's cooked.
And that's what, and it adds flavor.
Adds great flavor, of course, because it's basting the meat as it cooks. I'm also putting on the website, Michelle, for everybody, a great 7-bean soup made with soup bones.
Mm.
And oh, I love soup bone. Well, that's shank meat again. You know, it's got all the shank, what we call soup meat, you know. And then I'm also putting a beans and winter vegetable dish, kind of like a more of a liquefied cassoulet, but really a great dish. But I want to share with you today my braised veal shanks. Now, of course, you can use beef shanks too. You find them in the store all the time. They got a lot of meat around that center marrow bone. And what I love most about the veal and beef shanks is that, in my opinion, they are without a doubt the most flavorful of all meats that can go into a braising pot. And when we talk about braising, we're talking about browning meat, covering them with aromatic vegetables, onion, celery, bell pepper, the trinity, garlic, and then covering that with stock, bringing it to a boil, and putting it in an oven with a tight lid or on top of a stove on a low fire, and just let it braise. Let it just cook until that all of that meat concentrates and all those flavors are wonderful and the vegetables cook down and thicken. I mean, that's really what a braise is. Braise is cooking in liquid and a flavorful liquid. I might a little wine in there as well, you know.
Are shanks a popular cut of meat, or are they kind of the odd bits?
Well, I think for the majority of time up to this point, shanks were probably considered a lesser used or a lower price cut of meat that you would find. And most often people would buy two or three shanks from the butcher. I remember old chewing gum, you know, our butcher I talk about all the time. Chewing gum used to come around with his steak body truck, and he would sell meat out of the back of the truck to the Cajun communities. Nobody ever got sick, by the way, I might mention. No refrigeration. He just come around tooting the horn. And anyway, there was two people who came in trucks to the house. One was Andrew Capone's family with Capone Cleaners. And they would come tooting the horn, and they would come to your yard, pick up your laundry.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. Take it, clean it, wash it, press it, bring it back to you in the Capone Cleaners bags. And it was always good conversation when they drove up into the yard to deliver your laundry. What happened to that service?
I don't know. I would love that service.
Can you imagine that? Anyway, but yeah, I would think that the veal and beef shank bones were mostly used to add to a soup for flavoring. The meat would cook away. The marrow inside the bones would flavor the soup. But nowadays, restaurants have made them famous, especially your Italian restaurants, cooking your veal shanks in a beautiful tomato gravy. They call that Sunday gravy. And they'd put six veal bones in there with the meat around them, slow cook them. When they'd go to church, you know, the Italians were Catholic, so they'd go to that 12 o'clock high mass. That was a three-hour mass, you know. So if the priest was angry, it was three. And they would let them just stew and braise in that tomato sauce. And then when they came back, they had to cook the spaghetti. You know, 12, 15 minutes, the spaghetti was ready, and the Sunday gravy was done, and everybody would get a shank on that plate with all that meat falling. You got it? You got it in your mind
right
now?
Sounds delicious.
I guess it does. Huh? Anyway, yeah, so to answer your question, very inexpensive, lesser-used cut of meat that today sells for $35 on any restaurant plate understands how to cook it.
I'm looking at your recipe here, and you start by saying to tie each shank to the bone.
When you're cutting the shank, I want you to think about the bone from your knee to your ankle. That's the shank. And I want you to think on an animal taking that bone and cutting it every 3 inches. So now you got a circle of meat around a 3-inch bone filled with marrow in the center, and you take a string and you tie it tight so that during the cooking process, that meat doesn't, because the collagen and holding it together could start to cook away and the meat falls off of the bone, right? So if you tie it with some nice butcher's twine, once you brown it, then you put them down in the gravy and just let them slow simmer, and the tying keeps them together. So when you serve it on the plate, you just snip the little piece of twine and you take it off. Just like tying the turkey legs together or tying the chicken wings behind the back. You know what I mean, right?
Gotcha.
So anyway, y'all, for this wonderful braised veal shank with white beans and winter vegetables, the ultimate Cajun dish, I'm going to begin with 6 1.5-inch veal or beef shank bones. By the way, I should mention chewing gum would always give 6 or 7 shank bones as a little lanyard, a little extra.
Is that right?
Absolutely. You buy you a couple of good nice round steaks, he'd give you 2 shank bones. Yeah, and some chewing gum, of course. That's where he got his name from, some juicy fruit. He'd always give you a slice of juicy fruit. Anyway, so 6 1/2-inch veal shank bones, one cup of pre-soaked white beans, either white navy or cannellini beans. I use a cup of carrots that's diced 1 inch, a cup of parsnip, that's the white carrots, mm-hmm. those yellow carrots that have that wonderful flavor. I call them carrots. You know they're not.
They're great in mashed potatoes, too.
Oh, my God. Peel them and dice them 1 inch thick. Then you're going to have some sweet potatoes diced 1 inch thick. Then you're going to have some fingerling or white potatoes diced 1 inch thick. So you see what you have? You have all these beautiful root vegetables, mm-hmm. beans, carrots, parsnips, potatoes, fingerling potatoes. One turnip that's going to be peeled 1 inch diced. Oh, I tell you, I could keep going on. In other words, put whatever vegetables
we're
you want.
Vegetables or
root,
we're eating
root,
meat?
Root vegetables, girl. And then you're going to have a cup of flour, a little salt, pepper, granulated garlic. Now, what we're going to do, Michelle, we're going to take about a half a cup of bacon fat. You know that can my mare had on the back of the stove?
Yes.
She always had a bacon fat or pork fat or lard in it, right?
That's
so
right.
You're going to dust those shanks in a little seasoned flour. Of course, you're going to season them lovely with salt, pepper, and granulated garlic after they're tied. Then you're going to heat up in that large black Dutch oven. You're going to heat up that half a cup of bacon fat over medium-high heat. Not too high. The bacon fat will burn, and you don't want it to burn. So keep it about medium. And then you're going to long, slow, Michelle, long, slow. Michelle, take your time. Please don't rush it. So I'm browning my shank bones by turning them evenly until the golden brown in the bacon fat is not burned, Michelle. Then I'm going to remove it and set it aside, the shanks out of the fat. In that same pot, I'm going to saute my Trinity, my onions, my celery, my bell pepper. That's 1 cup of celery, 2 cups of onions, diced, of course. And I like to combine my bell peppers red and green. That way I have pretty color in the pot. And about 12 cloves of garlic thinly sliced. Now, you can put a lot more. I like more than that, but 12 cloves of garlic. You're going to saute all of that around in that nice bacon fat that's now have the meat drippings in it. And once all of that is cooked, really about 5 to 7 minutes, then I'm going to add to that 1 10-ounce can of Rotel tomatoes. Rotel is just diced tomatoes that has a little jalapeno in it.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I'm using that. Yeah, or you can use a 10-ounce can of roasted diced tomatoes without the jalapeno, which is also
peppers.
Very nice. And you're going to add that to it, bring that to kind of a simmer with all the vegetables. Once you have a good boil going, then, Michelle, this is the key. 2 cups of Pinot Noir.
Oh.
2 cups. Into that, 1 quart of beef stock. Good beef stock. You can buy it in the store now, or you can buy it. Don't buy the bouillon cubes. Buy the paste, a nice paste of beef stock. You can see it in
all
veal.
What about the liquid
stock? The demi. You can get the liquid stock, too. It's not quite as fortified. It's a little bit milder. Mm-hmm. So you're going to bring that quart of beef stock and 2 cups of Pinot Noir to a rolling boil over the onion, celery, bell peppers, garlic, and Rotel tomatoes. And once it's rolling boiling, you're going to take your browned shanks, and you're going to lower them right down into that nice boiling liquid, and you're going to cook it, you know, bring it all back to a boil. You're going to add your, remember those white beans? Add the beans to it now after it's all come to a rolling boil. I'm going to put the lid on it, and I'm going to do one of two things, Michelle. Either leave it on top of the stove on a low, low, low fire, or I'm going to put it in a 350-degree oven for about 2.5 hours. What else is that?
My mouth is watering. That sounds delicious.
I guess your mouth is watering right now. Huh? So, anyway, y'all, I guess that's about it. So, we've had a great show today talking about fat. We've cooked a little veal shanks, and now we're moving toward the middle of the year. Hey, y'all, we're going to see you back next week.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan, we are going to do a live in-studio listening session as we sit down with Oxford America's Rick Carr to discuss the release of the magazine's annual music issue. This year's issue celebrates the music of Tennessee. That's all coming up next time on Bill Street Caravan.
Saturday night at 11 here on KRVS.
This week on Harpistry, something to suit just about every musical taste, whether it's jazz, Celtic, Appalachian, South American, Swedish, Romanian, or New Age. Tune in Sunday at midnight and Monday at noon on KRVS.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.